Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve post-game show. With Dave Minuk, with Ezra Ginsberg, I am your host, Drew Mindell. The Winnipeg Jets into Montreal. Start of the game, trailing 2-0. End of the game, trailing 3-0, and the end of the season is rapidly approaching with game 4 tomorrow night. Nice to see you, gentlemen, since we last touched base yesterday morning. We were talking about on the show, on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, how the Jets needed to find another level. They needed to find another gear to get back into the series after two lackluster performances on home ice. Well, now you can say it's been three lackluster performances, two on home ice, one on the road. An absolute debacle by the Winnipeg Jets tonight, losing 5-1 to the Montreal Canadiens. The most important game of the year is how we described it yesterday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Somebody forgot to tell the Winnipeg Jets that, because that was an absolute no-show by the team in white tonight.
The Habs are just outplaying the Jets, plain and simple, boys. And, you know, the big question mark, Drew, going in, and we were talking about it on yesterday's show, you know, the status of Paul Stastny, right? And we weren't sure if he was going to play center or play wing. Well, it turns out he played both in this game, starts off on the wing, but then moves up the middle. And the Jets just didn't get the boost from him, right? And it's unfortunate because on the goal by Joel Armia, don't call him Joel Armia, right? Because when he was a member of the Jets, we were calling him Joel. Yeah. You know, just unfortunate because loses the faceoff, coughs up the puck, and obviously Armia, you know, picks it top corner and beats Hellebuck. And, you know, that's the killer goal, guys, right? Because you're sitting watching that game, you're thinking, you know, okay, you know, they're down 2-0. Lekkonen's goal was just, there was poor defensive coverage happening there. You know, the Jets had some good pressure in that second period. And obviously, you know, Wheeler hits the crossbar. He thought he scored. But, you know, you notice Wheeler, I mean, he was taking a picture in front of the net. I don't know what he was doing in front of the net. You know, he could have tied up a stick. But, you know, that was just too many whacks at the puck for Phil Deneau and Lekkonen. And we talked about Lekkonen. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, scored 18 goals in his first full year in the NHL. So Lekkonen's a guy that you think of as kind of like a bottom six forward who doesn't have much of a scoring touch. But that's just not the case. Like, this is a good player. And, you know, we've talked about the depth all series long, right, guys? Like, Corey Perry opens up the scoring. Like, this is a guy who, when the Habs acquired him, people were kind of laughing. Like, people were saying, like, Corey Perry really on the Habs? Like, is he even going to play? And obviously, you know, he didn't put up huge numbers during the regular season. But this is a guy who's been a major factor not only in this series, but he was a major factor last series against Toronto. So, I mean, there were some things that you liked in this game, right? Like Lowry, yeah. Kopp, and Perreault.
I'm not sure about that. It's about that there, Ezzy. I don't know that there was anything that Jets fans are going to point to or that the Jets can build upon. You know, hey, look, they're down 3-0. We know that it's next to impossible for a team to come back from being down 3-0. And there's no signs that this Winnipeg Jets team, the way they've been playing, are going to, you know, flip that script and are going to be a history making squad and come back down from 3-0 down, Dave. This was the game you needed. If you win tonight, if you have an effort that's commensurate with the pressure you're feeling tonight, and you're only down 2-1 after tonight's game with game 4 going tomorrow, then it's anybody's ball game. Then it's anybody's series. It's just an inexcusable egg for the Jets to lay tonight in Montreal. I mean, they look like a team that are happy to have the season come to an end tomorrow based on tonight's performance.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go that far because you guys – I wouldn't go that far, Drew. I would say a smidge extreme, but
I'm using a little bit of hyperbole.
Sure, but yeah, sure, okay. But I'm just not going to endorse that comment. I think what it ultimately comes down to me for this game was you're down 1-0 and you're being outshot 11-3 in the second period. How is that happening? How are you allowing Montreal to dictate play in a game where you are supposed to be the word desperation was used with Paul Maurice today in the morning availability. Urgency, that was another word that was used. And I get that you don't just try and chase a game. You don't try and chase offense. You know, I think Jordy Ben used the word defense wins championships. Okay, well, That's be that as it may. I mean, odd man rushes being given up. Still no. I mean, their zone entries were terrible. Dumping the puck in and no forecheck. I mean, what were the Jets doing? You get a nice play on that Perreault pass across to Adam Lowry to score the goal. Mm-hmm. But I mean, how many times could we say that the Jets looked really dangerous? Sure, Nikolaj Ehlers had a few opportunities, and he scores, and it changes the dynamic of the game. That's the nature of the beast. But ultimately, there were just too many things the Jets didn't do well in order to win this game. And it was a game that they needed to have. I mean, we talked about it. This was the pivotal game in the series. Mm-hmm. It's not impossible. As Ezzie talked about on Saturday, you know, a few teams have done it in the history of the NHL, but it's a pretty remote opportunity, chance, especially given the fact that you won't have Mark Scheifele tomorrow. Paul Stastny doesn't look healthy.
Which is to be expected. He's not. I mean, when you go from being out of the lineup to all, you're not coming back at 100%. I mean, you're not probably coming back anywhere near 100%. I mean, especially at this stage in the playoffs, Stastny is clearly not healthy player.
And like Kyle Connor didn't look great on some of the goals against. I mean, it was just the Jets weren't playing that. I don't know, as maybe like attention to detail. That to me is like what really seemed to be missing from this Jets squad tonight.
Yeah, well, and what I was getting at, Drew, in terms of some of the things you liked, I mean, Nick Ehlers was clearly, I don't know, I'm not talking about analytics. I'm talking about watching that game. Ehlers, to me, was the best forward. And you know when other people are talking about the fact that Ehlers isn't on the top power play unit, Arpin Basu was talking about that. There were other people on social media talking about that. Like, Ehlers, to me, was flying out there. And he's usually flying out there, and he's usually one of the Jets' most dynamic players. I'll go ahead and say it. I do think he is the Jets' most talented player. But, yeah, I mean, Drew, you're not going to get that. When you lose a game 5-1, and this isn't one of those games where, you know, the Jets lost 5-1 and the score isn't reflective of how the play was. It was reflective. The Habs, and I agree with Dave, the second period stands out to me as the period. Like, I realized, like, we talked about, you know, Wheeler rings it off the crossbar. Really good chance there, right? Connor had a really good chance. You guys remember Ehlers made a really nice pass to Connor, and you know, he just kind of ran out of space. Carey Price made a good save. It was a backhand, if I'm not mistaken. There were some good chances from the Jets top six, but at the end of the day, you know, the last two games the Jets have one goal, right? And like, you have to give Carey Price a certain amount of credit for this, and you have to give the Habs a certain amount, the Habs defense and the Habs forward group. They're a pretty good defensive team, but you know, they lose Jeff Petrie, right? So like, Shea Weber is basically playing with every single one of the other four remaining defensemen, right? So, I mean, like, the three penalties stand out to me as well, right? Like, the cross checks from Pierre-Luc Dubois, Paul Stastny, Andrew Kopp. Like, those penalties killed any chance you had at gaining some momentum and coming back. And I realize, you know, when it's 4-1, guys, like, you could say that the game was over, but you know, you still have an opportunity, and we saw that in game 3 of the Jets Oilers series. So you can't tell me that you can't make up a 3-goal deficit. You can't tell me that.
Fine, you're right. We did see it happen relatively recently. It was last series we saw it happen.
It's hard to do, Drew, but I'm just saying, like, those penalties made it impossible for the Jets to come
and
back.
And he's right. That's the whole point. That to me was the ball game. When you're taking those penalties, you have no chance. You're not regaining momentum. You're just not going to do it. It's not going to happen. And it kills any chance you have. I mean, again, we all thought that was going to be remote, that the Jets would have any chance to come back into this game. But to the point that we saw this in game 3 of the last series. Yep. So it's not impossible, but you can't be doing it from the penalty box. And the Pierre-Luc Dubois penalty, undisciplined. Look, the refs weren't very, the refs let some things go. Like, I don't mind if refs put the whistles away. They put the whistles away. But I saw, like, there was one play in the first period. Nikolaj Ehlers is skating in. Guy's got a stick in his hands. Should have been a penalty. If you're calling the game tight, doesn't get called. So I'm like, okay, fine. They're letting stuff go. Then they call a penalty. You know, and again, this isn't about the refs. I didn't think the refs were the difference in the game. But at the same time, like, the Jets just have to know calling Kopp in that scrum. You're just not. It's not worth it. It just isn't. Like, I get that you're frustrated, but you have to have the composure to stay without taking a penalty there, because you can't come back. You know, a 5-1 empty net goal. I mean, it's over there at that point. I mean, it was over anyways, really. But any chance was over, because look, we saw it with Matthew Perreault. You score, then you get two quick ones. Suddenly, you're back in a game. We're not seeing it because, you know, you're missing Mark Scheifele. Like I said, Paul Stastny isn't healthy. And you're Kyle Connor's not doing anything. Pierre-Luc Dubois isn't doing anything. Nikolai Ehlers, I agree with Ezzy. He was trying, but there's not enough guys. You know, I'm going to use the ultimate sports cliche, and I hate myself for doing it, but there's no I in team. It's supposed to be a team game. You know, we talked about it. This is supposed to be a collective unit, and everybody was playing like individuals out there.
Which Jets players tonight played with the requisite amount of emotion given the circumstances, given the stakes that tonight's game had? You know, the difference between 2-1 and 3-0. Ehlers, Lowry. I mean, you can count them on one hand. There weren't very many, to your point, Ezzy. Exactly right. The answer is not very many. And that, to me,
speaking of Lowry, like, obviously that was a beauty pass by Matty Perreault, who seems to always you know, turn his game up when he's playing in his home province, right? But what was Josh Anderson doing there? Like, to me, that was another opportunity that the Jets, you know, if they score a goal, they might make it interesting. Let's be honest, the game was over at that point. And Adam Lowry would have ripped his head off. Like I don't know what Anderson was thinking there by taking that stupid penalty and then kind of taunting Lowry. Anyways, I didn't like that.
When you're up 4-1, you can taunt guys. That doesn't bother me. If Josh Anderson wants to taunt the Jets when they're up 4-1 in the game and they're up,
it's unsportsmanlike.
Don't give me that nonsense. Win the game. To the victor go the spoils. I don't care about sportsmen. Like, Josh Anderson should point to the scoreboard. It's about to be 4-1, about to be 5-1 in the game, and 3-0 in the series. And that's when the Jets are going to try and show some fight. I don't give a damn if it's not unsportsmanlike. You know, youth sports, yeah, it's unsportsmanlike. If my kids are playing soccer, you know, and they're 6 and 7 years old, yeah, I'm going to teach them sportsmanship. When you're a professional athlete and you're up 4-1 in a game and you're about to go up 3-0 in a series, does not bother me in the least bit to see a little bit of taunting. Because guess what? They deserve it. They earned it. They beat the Jets 3 straight games handily. Doesn't bother me in the least bit that Josh Anderson might be pouring some salt in the Jets' wounds. Because the Jets, look, they had nothing tonight, and it's inexcusable to me. And I think they had nothing. I mean, look, you can't excuse Paul Maurice here as well to trot out the same defense that he did after game 2 when the defense couldn't do anything. It is crazy to me to not have. I know there's injuries and I know there's a suspension to Scheifele, but the line for the Winnipeg Jets that sets the tone game in and game out, and is the most consistent line for the Winnipeg Jets, that is the Kopp, Lowry, Appleton line. Do you know how many minutes they've played together this entire series? 0. And you're telling me that the Jets are better off with Matthew Perreault playing with Lowry and Appleton and Christian Vesalainen playing on the fourth line rather than putting Vesalainen in an elevated role and giving him a shot because it allows you to keep Kopp, Lowry, and Appleton together? Look, if Kopp, Lowry, and Appleton play together, this game, they set the tone for the Jets. There's nobody in the Jets forward group today that was setting a tone at all. There was nobody who was going to try and drive that bus just because they all looked like, to Dave's point, they all looked like a bunch of individuals who really weren't sure about how to play with one another. It starts, you know, that's Maurice's fault. The players certainly hold a fair bit of blame. There's no shortage of blame to go around for the Winnipeg Jets' performance in tonight's contest and in the series so far. And, you know, when we last series, you know, we praised Paul Maurice. A lot of people praised him as outcoaching Dave Tippett. Well, Dominic Ducharme, who's a rookie NHL head coach, who's only the interim head coach of the Montreal Canadiens, is absolutely schooling Paul Maurice in terms of coaching so far this series, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you could give the edge to Paul Maurice in this series for sure. But I think when you look back on this series, what's going to stand out to most people watching, you know, these three games is the lack of offense from the Jets. And yeah, they scored 3 goals. One of those goals was late coming from Kyle Connor to make it a little bit interesting. And then the Habs added that empty netter. But I mean, that's the story here. Like, you know, Blake Wheeler doesn't have any goals through 3 games. Andrew Kopp doesn't have any goals through 3 games. Pierre-Luc Dubois doesn't have any goals through 3 games. A lot of players don't have any goals.
22 games to be precise, yes.
Well, but I mean, there's a lot of guys that, I mean, Kyle Connor's got the one goal in the series. And I just think that, you know, that is to me, what really stands out. And I agree, Drew. I mean, we talked about it on Saturday's show. I would love to see Kopp, Lowry, and Appleton together. And when you start, you know, using the line blender, it's one thing to mix up the lines when you're not creating a lot of offense, but Maurice did it twice, right? Because we talked about Stastny starts on the wing, and then what do? You move Stastny up. And then, you know, it goes back to what if the Jets Stastny's- were having.
Sorry, Ezzy. Let me just say this. If Stastny is healthy enough to play center at any point in time during that game, and clearly he was because they used him at center, he should have started the game at center. That's where he should have started. And that allows you to make some changes. That allows you to move Andrew Kopp back to where I think he belonged with Lowry and Appleton. Look, I just think Paul Maurice sort of, you know, some of his decision-making and his lineup making and his lineup decisions sort of tied the Jets' hands behind their back a little bit in tonight's game. I do believe that. Jordy Ben, I mean, what did you see from Jordy Ben that you know, the Jets couldn't get out of their own zone in game two? So you trot back out with the same defense? I mean, what's the downside of using Ville-Heinola? And I won't be surprised if he uses Ville-Heinola in game four. But guess what? At that point in time, it's a day late and a dollar short.
I don't know why you'd use Ville-Heinola at this point. If there was any game you were going to use him, it's this game. And you know what? We can, you know, sit here all night long and talk about that. But I don't think many of us expected Heinola to go in, right? Like, we talked about it on yesterday's show. We said it could be an option. But based on look at what happened, you know, down the stretch. How much did Heinola play? He didn't play as much as we thought he was going to play. What did he play? Two or three of the last 10 games, Dave? Mm-hmm. I'd have to go back and look, but he certainly didn't play, you know, half or anywhere close to, you know, the majority of the games, right? So I didn't necessarily think Heinola was going in, but again, I don't know. Like, Jordy Ben obviously didn't play much tonight, and that's not the reason why the Jets lost. And again, Hellebuck kept the Jets in it in that second period, right? Like, the Nick Suzuki save, you know, stands out to me. Cole Caufield and Nick Suzuki have been tremendous for Montreal. I mean, they've got a lot of great performances, but I mean, at the end of the day, the Jets have enough firepower in their lineup, even without Mark Scheifele, that they should be scoring more. I really believe that. And I realize that, you know, a guy like Pierre-Luc Dubois, he's probably battling something. Paul Stastny, you mentioned it, Drew. He's clearly not at 100%. He might only be, you know, around 50%. But, you know, there's other guys that can put the puck in the net, right? Like, we talked about it. So, you know, it has to be frustrating, you know, if you're on that team right now, because you know that Carey Price is, what's his save percentage right now? Close to 950 in these playoffs, like whatever it is, he's playing really well. But also the Habs defense is playing really well. And it's not just Shea Weber. It's not just Jeff Petrie who left the game. Like, Joel Edmondson's playing pretty well. We know that he won a cup with St. Louis. Like, you know, Brett Kulak, he's playing really well, even though Matty Perreault slipped that puck between his legs for the goal that Lowry scored. But like, this Habs team is pretty good, and I think the record kind of fooled a lot of people going into that series against Toronto, but this Montreal team's really solid, especially when Carey Price is playing like this.
Yeah, you're right. Carey Price is playing very good hockey, but the Jets, again, continue to make it easy on him, Dave. It's not like there was any additional net front traffic in tonight's game. And what did we talk about, you know, on yesterday's show? On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show yesterday morning, we talked about how the Jets needed to get to the dirty areas. They needed to make it more difficult on Carey Price. They needed to scrum it up and you know, really turn it into a rugby match in front of Carey Price. And they just didn't. And so everything's on the periphery. You're not going to score on Carey Price on the periphery. You're just not. He's too good of a goalie. Even, you know, when his regular season results at times have been, you know, haven't been what they have been, you know, five, seven years ago in his career. He's still too damn good of a goalie to make it that easy on him. And the Jets, you know, they did it again. They made it easy on the opposing goalie, and you wonder why you're down 3-0 in the series now.
I think there was an important point made on the broadcast, just that idea of using Jake Allen 17 in the last, I think, 21 Montreal games to get Carey Price rested and get him ready to go for the playoffs and ensure that he was going to be at 100% health. And if you're the Jets, I mean, I wonder, look, we talked about this. You had to take away his eyes. You couldn't allow him. You're not beating him from 10 feet away or 30 feet away with a shot that this guy can see. If he can see it, he can stop it. I mean, it's just and people are getting mad because I said, I'm like, what about the game plan to remove his eyes? And I was like, guys, that was the game plan. That was what everyone talked about, creating traffic in front. The Jets, and kudos to the Habs for not allowing them to establish a net front presence. But like, The Jets couldn't do that, and that's what they needed to do, was create a little traffic. We talked about it. You can't just score pretty goals. You know, this is the playoffs. This is the NHL. This isn't a function of, like, trying to score the prettiest goal. So you look at that and think to yourself, you didn't try and change your game plan. So now what? I mean, Montreal, it's interesting, right? Like, so you got a back-to-back. Nate Thompson played, what, 6 minutes, 10 minutes of this game? I think Christian Vesalainen played six. Trevor Lewis, I'm assuming, is probably closer to Nate Thompson's number.
He was at nine.
Yeah.
With all the penalty killing and everything else, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, although it's ironic, right? I mean, do you really? You'd probably have to be more concerned about Montreal's shorthanded ability than their power play. Their power play is 12th in the playoffs right now. I think they're clicking at around 16.7%, I think. So, to me, I wonder if you try and inject some young legs into this lineup. I mean, is it smack of desperation? Do you give David Gustafson, do you give Dominic Toninato an opportunity to give your team a little bit of a boost? I don't know. I mean, I just think, like, I've been a big David Gustafson booster because of what I've seen him do with the Manitoba Moose. And physically, you know, he might be 20 years old, but the guy's a man. Like, he's built. He can handle it. Now, he hasn't played hockey since the Moose season ended, so that's a bit of a problem. But, you know, maybe he's a guy who can give your team a little bit of energy. And like, guys – like, let's be realistic. He's played penalty kill. He's played penalty kill for the Manitoba Moose for the entire season. So the whole point of this is, like, you know, we talk about, you don't want to put a guy in from the AHL, like, a guy who's going to play your top line minutes, your in the first line, and make him a fourth line checker. To be honest, you kind of what they're doing with Christian Vesalainen. But David Gustafson, first of all, again, first line center with the Manitoba Moose, but he plays penalty kill. So if you want him to play center in the NHL or even on the wing, he can go in there and he can handle penalty kill responsibilities. I'm just saying it's time to do something because, you know, you can't have to – the point as he made. All of that – I mean, it's not just like Nate – I'm not blaming Nate Thompson, Trevor Lewis, because believe me, if your season is relying on them, then you're in big trouble. although that joke made, look at what the Montreal's fourth line has done for them. I mean, so it's a tale of two cities in that regard. I'm just saying it's – it's already beyond time. We thought that would have perhaps happened today, but tomorrow your season's on the line. There's no coming back. You may as well try something tomorrow because keep trying this. You're saying, well, we believe in the process. I'm seeing some of the comments on Twitter. What's the process? You've scored one goal in the last two games. That's not a process. That's a process. Yeah. Sorry. Actually, I stand corrected. It's a process for losing the playoff games and being out of the playoffs.
Well, yeah, and to my point earlier about Paul Maurice historically being a day late and a dollar short with some roster decisions, you remember when they were down 3-1 to Vegas in the Western Conference Final a few years ago, that's when he decided to press the panic button and he took out Tobias Enstrom, and we haven't seen Toby Enstrom since, and brought in Dmitry Kulikov, and made, you know, those kind of rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic kind of moves at that point in time. You need to be proactive, not reactive. And Paul Maurice had an opportunity to be proactive tonight with some of his lineup decisions, both who is in the lineup and how he deploys the roster. And he just failed at that.
See, to me, I think it's more like, look, I really, it goes back to what we talked about for weeks during the regular season with Ville Heinola. Let's not beat that dead horse again. I think Ville Heinola, we know that he would have given them that puck moving ability that Jordy Benn doesn't offer you. He was not going to win the Jets this game, right? Like, this is a game when you're down 2-0, it's the same old cliche, but like, your best players have to be your best players. Same thing with the Toronto Maple Leafs guys, right? Like, again, like, just because the Leafs lost that 7-game series doesn't mean that Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner aren't, you know, two of the best players in the NHL, especially Matthews. Like, it's hard to argue that, you know, he isn't the best goal scorer in the NHL, but like, you just can't say that right now. And don't get me wrong. Like, Mark Scheifele's absence, I don't care what anybody says. I don't care what anybody in the media, fans, it's massive. That's your best offensive player. But Kyle Connor is your best goal scorer. Nick Ehlers is your most dynamic player. And I really did think, you know, Ehlers was really noticeable tonight. Mm-hmm. Like, he was creating offense. But at the end of the day, guys, like, you have to show results. You have to score on Carey Price. And a lot of people have struggled to score on Carey Price. Like, he's arguably a Hall of Famer. If you ask me, he's probably not arguably a Hall of Famer. He is a Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. But, like, this is not Carey Price goalieing the Jets. Like, he's been good, but the Jets have not made it hard enough on him. So, yeah, could you see Dave, like someone come into the lineup? Like, could Jansen Harkins come back in? Could you see David Gustafson? Could you see Ville Heinola? Maybe. But I really do think if the Jets do end up coming back and winning a game or winning two games, it's not necessarily going to be because of those moves. Those guys could help, but they're not going to be the determining factor in whether or not the Jets make a miraculous comeback. Because I agree with you, Drew. Like, four teams in the history of the NHL have come back. It's a monumental task. But if you're the Jets, you're saying, well, I mean, we came back in game three, scored three goals in 3 minutes. You have to rally behind something because they're not going to just, you know, lay down and just lose game four without putting an effort. And I did think the effort was there, too little too late.
I didn't think the effort was where it needed to be tonight, Ezzy. I appreciate your opinion, and that's totally legitimate. But from my perspective, the effort wasn't where it needed to be. They needed more. The players needed to produce more, and they didn't. Now, did they not produce more because something Montreal themselves did? Did they not produce more because of an inability to produce more? You know, I don't think that Montreal is all, you know, a juggernaut all of a sudden. It's not like, no. You know, when the series started, you know, 3 games ago, the Jets, you know, to a lot of people thought, you know, people thought the Jets would have been the favorite. I thought the Jets would have been the favorite. You look at the high-end talent on the Jets versus the high-end talent on the Canadiens, and the Jets have more high-end talent. Well, that high-end talent on the Jets has been neutralized, one, due to suspension, and two, due to just a lack of performance.
And injuries, right? Like, I mean, Dylan DeMello's loss is huge. Paul Stastny misses the first two games. But you're right. Like, I'm not going to say that that was the best effort I've seen from this Jets team this year. There's no doubt about that. It has to be your best effort. But it had to be your best effort and your best performance in game two. Like, we talked about it, right? Like, in a series in which you're down 2-0, obviously game three is must win. But when you're down 1-0, it's always must win as well in game two, right? So, I mean, they were already a hole going into this game. And, you know, like, again, you know, I go back to it, but you just haven't seen, you've seen one good shift, a couple of good shifts. Like, I thought, you know, again, I thought Kyle Connor, you know, to Dave's point, like, he's looked much faster in the last couple of games than he did in the first game. And I think that, you know, he's been noticeable out there. I think, obviously, you know, we talked about, you know, Wheeler had a really good scoring chance. Like, he's been, you know, trying to create offense. Like, he hasn't obviously scored yet, but it's just the Jets are who they are right now. Like, you're not getting Scheifele back until game six. And it goes kind of back to what I said. And this is maybe just me. Again, I don't disagree with Dave that you maybe insert somebody just to give you some energy, right, guys? Because they start this game less than 24 hours from now. So it couldn't hurt to put in, you know, a Jansen Harkins. We know what he did last year in the bubble. Or it couldn't hurt to put in Ville Heinola. Really, the argument would be, like, what do you have to lose? I just don't think, unless Connor, Ehlers, Wheeler, Dubois, unless these guys start get going, series is going to be over in 4 or 5.
And I would suggest that probably the key is putting those guys into roles where they're going to have success. And you're going to show what their talent level is. I mean, Christian Vesalainen can try and be a fourth line grinder, but Christian Vesalainen isn't a fourth line grinder. So why are you doing that to him? You know, David Gustafson can go and be a fourth line center. It's not a problem. You know, he's probably looking towards being your third line center eventually anyways. So that's kind of where you're thinking for him. So it's not the end of the world, because he's one of the most defensively responsible players I've watched. Jansen Harkins is a guy, very cerebral. You could play him on the second line and he'll facilitate, or you can play him on the fourth line and he'll be responsible. So you've got to play to your strength. Throwing a guy in the lineup and just saying, well, we got Christian Vesalainen in. How is Christian Vesalainen going to do with 6 minutes and 38 seconds in a game? The kid's got an unbelievable shot, and people can say he's a bust all he wants. He's not a bust. He's a decent player. I'm not saying he's like going to go and take over the playoffs, but I'm just suggesting that you have to give him a path to success. And right now, playing him with Nate Thompson and Trevor Lewis and grinding the game, I know that the playoffs are about working your opponent down, but that's not Christian Vesalainen's game. So
the fourth line, you mentioned it, Dave, they barely played. They didn't have an impact on the game.
All I'm saying is, if you put Perreault on that fourth line where he's played well with those guys anyways, if you're going to keep those guys in the lineup, and you put Vesalainen, you know, in an opportunity for success, Andrew Kopp, to Drew's point, he's looked better with those guys on the third line then I think he's looked on a first and a second line. Yeah. So, you know, it's always like the problem with the Jets is it's always guys one level above their pay grade, right? And so you've got like Tucker Pullman, when he's playing with Logan Stanley on that third pairing, Tucker Pullman's fine. When he's with Tucker Pullman and up with Josh Morrissey, it creates a little more chaos. And Derek Forbert,
and all Jets players today in time on ice. Tucker Pullman played 24 minutes and 46 seconds, which is 3 minutes more than any other Jets defenseman. I mean, look, Tucker Pullman, when he was, like you said, like you just said, Dave, when he was playing with Logan Stanley, that made sense. That was a good role for him to play on the third line. Tucker Pullman shouldn't be, not that Tucker Pullman's at fault for tonight's result or anything like that. So I'm not blaming Tucker Pullman, but the fact that he played almost 25 minutes in a 60 minute hockey game is just utterly bizarre. I mean, I just don't get that. I don't understand how that happens. And I know that, you know, look, there's nobody on the Jets defense who is anything to write home about, but I don't know how the defense gets the minutes get allotted that Tucker Pullman plays that much in the course of a game.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, we talked about it during the regular season. We talked about it during the playoffs. Like, and that's why Dylan DeMello is such a huge loss, because Morrissey and DeMello are so effective in a shutdown role. And that allows you to move Pullman down to the third pair with now Logan Stanley. We know Forbert Pionk has been a favorite pair of Paul Maurice, and deservedly so. It was the kind of, you know, security blanket, as Drew called it, all season long, especially Neil Pionk, who was arguably the Jets' best defenseman all year long. I thought Morrissey, you know, didn't have his best game tonight. You know, you could look at the kind of the expected goals against just to see that, like, Morrissey didn't have his best game. And again, yeah, you know, Josh Morrissey's an excellent defenseman. I'm a big fan of his game. Just tonight, you know, he wasn't good. And it kind of goes to your point, right? It's like one of those things, boys, right? Like, when things are going bad for a few players, they seem to go bad for almost the entire team. And there just hasn't been that many nights in this series, that many games in this series, I should say. Same thing, I guess. But like, there just haven't been enough players that are having those types of nights. And you know, who's putting the team on their back? Like we talked about, when Mark Scheifele is suspended and he's done for the series after game one, you know, who's that going to be? Like, you're kind of looking to your captain, Blake Wheeler. You're expecting him to do it. Well, if it's not Wheeler, it's probably going to be your number one goal scorer, Kyle Connor, right? Like, and I do think, I mean, and it's not necessarily a simplification here, but the Habs have a big mobile defense. And I know a lot of people like to say, oh, these guys are all slow. No, they can all skate. They're not Scott Niedermeyer, but all of these guys can skate. A guy like Alex Romanov can't even get into the lineup. So even a guy like Brett Kulak, even Erik Gustafsson. Remember Erik Gustafsson, guys, like a couple years ago, he had, what did he have, 50 points for the Blackhawks? Mm-hmm. Like, that was a good acquisition by the Habs. He's actually been very effective. So, like, this Habs defense is...
Didn't Kulak, by the way, try and fight Bufflin 1 year?
He might have. That would have been a stupid Sounds decision familiar. Because I don't think anybody's ever beat Buffalo.
I know, but I'm pretty sure I remember him, like, I think it was like an exhibition game or something like that. And I thought to myself, you must be pretty crazy to think that you're going to go up against this guy. I'll have to look into that. I think he did, though.
I seem to remember that a little bit. Your memory is much better than mine, Dave, and we know the reason for that, right? But like, there just haven't been those types of performances, individual and the lines. And that's why I think, boys, you saw Paul Maurice go to the blender multiple times in tonight's game, right? Like, but moving Stastny.
But he didn't blend the right things. I mean, if you go to the blender, but you're still, you know, if you're still blending a strawberry and hamburger milkshake together, it's not going to work. It doesn't taste good. It doesn't matter how many times you go to the blender. It seems like the obvious decisions, the obvious options. Now, granted, they're obvious to us and they're obvious to a lot of people in the chat, which means that they probably don't mean anything. But look, Christian Vesalainen, to your point, Dave, it just doesn't make any sense. I don't know why at any point in time why you would think Christian Vesalainen as a fourth line forward, that's going to be the ticket to success. That's putting a guy in a position to succeed. It isn't. I mean, and if I know that, and you guys know that, and the people in the chat know that, and everybody else can sort of see that, and I'll tell you what, Christian Vesalainen knows that as well. Why would it succeed? What evidence was there that should succeed at any point in time? And there wasn't any, because it wouldn't. You're playing him with Nate Thompson and Trevor Lewis, two guys who are not going to create offense. So you're putting a guy who's offensively inclined, who's got a very good shot, and you're just hindering his performance. You lose Dylan DeMello, and that's a huge loss, and we talked about it. And you lose Dylan DeMello, and what does DeMello do? Well, he's very good at skating the puck out of your own zone. He's very good at making a good first pass. And who do you replace him with? You replace him with a guy who is at best a seventh, eighth defenseman who's not going to generate any offense, who's going to, sacrifice his body. He's going to, he's going to try and do everything he can, but he's not, to help your team to succeed, but he's not replacing what you're losing. You have a guy on your roster who, albeit is young and albeit is inexperienced, but he can do a reasonable impression of Dylan DeMello, and you don't use him. The decisions by Paul Maurice.
And for the record, remember, Drew, quickly interject, but my conversation with Craig Heisinger at the end of the Moose season, when we did our wrap up, Moose end of season roundtable, Craig Heisinger, assistant general manager of the Winnipeg Jets, general manager of the Manitoba Moose, called Ville Heinola the best defenseman in the AHL for the games he was playing. Just to add a little perspective.
Look, I know that I go back to the trade deadline when the Jets didn't do anything, when they only brought in Jordy Benn and Kevin Cheveldayoff, whether it was him deflecting talking about Ville Heinola or whether it was him trying to send a message about using Ville Heinola. It seems like it's an obvious, it's something worth trying when you know that Jordy Benn is not going to be
the only counter is that Ville Heinola isn't comfortable playing on his right side. So you'd have to account for that.
What about the entry level contract, Dave?
Well, that too.
I'm joking. It was a
joke. I know. But I'm saying the reality is
Morrissey and Heinola played together earlier in the year. Granted, it was only one game. I mean,
one game or two games?
Might have been one or two games. I mean,
Ottawa game and they played a Toronto game. I'm just saying when he and Dylan Samberg were paired together in the Moose, it was Samberg who said he'll go to the right side because Heinola wasn't super comfortable playing on his off wing. So on the offside. So that would be the only factor. But I mean, again, don't get me wrong. I'm he's still a very talented guy. Yeah. I'm just saying that
even on his offside, even playing either him or Morrissey playing in an uncomfortable position, they're going to potentially give you more than Jordy Benn is going to give you. Well, and it's just no disrespect to Jordy Benn.
Troy thinks that Ville playing center is better than Benn on D.
it's just a little frustrating to me.
Drew, I think people are liking your rants tonight because Parallax says you can't handle the Drew.
You can't. That's funny. You can't handle the truth. Yeah, most people would. Most people who know me would definitely agree that they can't handle me.
But, I'm pretty sure that's Drew's burner account, by the way.
I want to say, well, let's take this opportunity to say good evening to everybody that's joining us. It is Sunday evening. This is the Illegal Curve post game show. Drew Mindell, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg. We're talking about the Jets' defeat to the Montreal Canadiens. A 5-1 Jets loss. If they were behind the 8-ball before, now they're really behind the 8-ball, trailing in the series 3-0. It could be over as early as tomorrow night when game 4 between these two teams goes again in Montreal. While you're here, while you're watching, while you're chatting, while you're listening, be sure to smash the like button. That's all we ask of you. We ask two things of you. Smash the like button and keep the conversation in the chat window nice and respectful. You can disagree, but just do so in a respectful manner. That's all we ask of you.
Keep it clean like Jerry Seinfeld's stand-up routine, right, Drew? Never swears.
If you want to go with that analogy, that certainly works for me, Ezzy. Keep it clean because the only Ezzy, Dave, and myself can personally insult one another. That's how this show works. It's just again.
I was expecting an insult there, Drew. I thought you were going to go after Dave or me.
I got to be honest. I'm struggling a little.
Our former producer Timmy Debehan is in the chat.
What's up,
Timmy? Nice to see. Good morning there. Good evening to you there, Timmy. I'm struggling a little bit. I got to be honest. I'm feeling the effects of my second dose.
Hold on. I agree with what Alan said, but hold on. Let me just pull it up on the chart on the screen. Where to go? Hold on. This is a good one.
I mean, those two quiet guys.
I didn't realize I was signing up tonight for the Drew Mindell experience. As did you?
No, but I was listening to the Jimi Hendrix experience a little bit earlier. But I think Drew is expressing frustration that I think a lot of Jets fans feel out there, right, guys? Like, let's not forget that this Jets team swept a pretty good Oilers team that has a couple of good superstars in Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. Obviously, I'm being, you know, very tongue-in-cheek there. I mean, those are the two best players in the world right now. Or at the very least, they're, you know, two of McDavid is the best player, but the point is they're top five, both top five guys. So, I mean, yeah. The Jets came into this series on a big high. Mm-hmm. And yeah, if the Jets ultimately lose this series, which down 3-0, there's a good chance they will lose this series. A lot of people are going to talk about, you know, the 8 or 9 day layoff, whatever it was. That's not a factor after the early part of the first game. Like, you're not going to use that as an excuse. The Jets were relatively healthy, you know, coming into that game. But let's be honest, similar to what happened in the bubble last year against Calgary, when you lose two key players, and it just happens to be, you know, Mark Scheifele again, similar to last year when Matthew Tkachuk took him out with that questionable hit. You know, obviously it's a suspension, not an injury here. But, I mean, it shows you that maybe, you know, this Jets team is a little bit more fragile than we thought. And we saw this team, you know, go through some really tough times throughout the season, namely, you know, the 7-game losing streak and losing the 9 out of 10 games. But I mean, let's be honest, guys, they've gone through adversity. They've persevered, and you can't use that as an excuse. You can't use, you know, what happened towards the end of the regular season as an excuse, because they swept the Oilers again. Like, let's not forget about that. And obviously they weren't able to continue that momentum into this series, but games 2 and 3, they just haven't made it hard enough on Montreal here. Like, it goes back to what we said. Yes, Carey Price is one of the best goaltenders of all time, but Carey Price hasn't, you know, Dominic Hasek'd the Winnipeg Jets here. Like, it's just been lack of offensive creativity, lack of offensive chances, lack mm-hmm. of zone time, lack of possession. Like, the Jets haven't had the puck enough in this series. Mm-hmm. Well, it's just been dump in the yeah. Like, Cassie Campbell talked about it on the broadcast. Like, you've seen it a little bit where the Habs have worked down low. And look at Corey Perry's goal, Drew. Like, Corey Perry's goal, that was like a goal that you would see, like, you know, 10 years ago in the NHL. He just kind of works the puck down low, uses his reach, uses his big body, and just kind of, you know, curls around and shoots the puck. And yeah, like, could help.
And he does it against Connor. He does it against Connor and Wheeler and
yeah, like, yeah, you know, like, so exactly. It was the Habs fourth line against the Jets, whatever you want to call it, top line or second line, whatever, because the blender was out, obviously.
They were in the midst of a line change, obviously. Dubois right. hadn't come on for Kopp yet.
But the point is that yeah. it wasn't, you know, like Perry was doing that against, you know, Nate Thompson, Trevor Lewis, or Christian Vesalainen. And so it's a disappointing game, guys. Like, when your season's on the line, game two was disappointing as well. But, you know, tonight's game, you know, really, I think it's going to be tough to recover from, because, you know, Mark Dumont mentioned it on yesterday's show. There might be 5,000 fans at tomorrow's game. And whether it's 2,500 or 5,000, you know that every single person in that building, unless there's Jets fans in attendance, are going to be bringing their brooms.
I saw there were two Jets fans in the opening shots of in the crowd earlier tonight.
But, so 2,498 fans are going to be
didn't have anything to cheer about. That's for sure. You know, and that would have been a long night being around all those Habs fans as they were celebrating in the ole ole ole.
Yeah,
exactly right. You know, maybe they probably just got rid of their Jets jerseys pretty quickly there. But to your point, Ezzy, you know, about the Jets approach, you know, I haven't been able to discern what their strategy is or what their approach is in the course of this series in terms of generating offense. You know, you knew watching against Edmonton, so you saw them play as that five-man unit and you saw them, you know, you could sort of identify what they were trying to do in order to succeed. I haven't been able to discern, you know, what the strategy is. You know, in the pregame, you know, before the series started, what did the Jets identify as their opportunity to attack the Montreal Canadiens? Because I have no idea. And is that a testament to how Montreal's played? Certainly to some extent. But it's also a testament to how poorly the Jets have played in that you haven't been able to identify what the approach is, what the strategy is, what the thinking was, where they saw an advantage that yep. they could take, that they could try and use to their avail.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%, Drew. And I think, you know, this is something we touched on for those who were watching, you know, the Saturday morning show yesterday. Like, Montreal takes away, they close those gaps. You know, they're a big defense. You know, they've got good defensively responsible forwards. It's tough to score off the rush, and it's tough to, you know, create turnovers on them. So what do you have to do? I mean, you have to not only have a good tenacious forecheck, but, you know, you've got to create something down low. And, you know, cycle is something that's, you know, cliche in hockey, but like sometimes that's what you have to do. And you have to have the puck, you have to possess the puck and make something happen, you know, with you know, your three forwards and hopefully your defense can get activated. There hasn't been enough where the Jets have had the Habs on their heels, Drew. And that speaks to your point in terms of like, what was the game plan? And, you know, you could say all you want about, you know, attacking with speed and playing fast and everything like that. And, you know, generating speed through the neutral zone and getting pucks deep and getting pucks behind the defense. Well, the Jets didn't do much of that. Like you've seen a few nice goals in the series, but you just haven't seen it enough. Like you've seen maybe a good, you know, 3-4 minute stretch. You haven't, how many like consecutive good periods have you seen? Well, first off, the Jets haven't led at all in this series in three games. So that's a big problem. The Habs have always scored the first goal and never relinquished the lead, but you just haven't seen a good shift followed by a good shift followed by a good shift.
Well, to your point, Ezzy, about you know, the need for the Jets to, you know, to have some shifts where they cycle and they grind. I mean, the Jets are a team that, you know, their top six is built to succeed off the rush. And the problem there is, though, that when your top six is not your typical top six, what you count your top six on being, then you're trying to win off the rush with guys who are better equipped to play the cycle game, like an Andrew Kopp. So then the Lowry and Appleton and Perreault line, they haven't been able to cycle at all during this series. So, you know, it's a combination of, you know, your top six are built to play off the rush, but your top six is not the same top six that would do that. And then your bottom six that could potentially cycle isn't the same bottom six, so they can't do that either. So whatever your typical strategy is or whatever your typical approach is, you no longer have the personnel deployed to play that kind of style. That's why I think having Kopp, Lowry, and Appleton, if you know, reuniting them where they should have been reunited for today's game, that would have been, you know, that at least you would have had a line there that you know their identity. And then if you move Perreault back to the fourth line with Thompson and Lewis, that line knows their identity. Instead, you have these four Winnipeg Jets lines where none of them know what their identity is supposed to be. Are we supposed to be off the rush? Are we supposed to be a cycle team? The players just seem perplexed as to how they should be trying to succeed. And that, to me, is on the coaching staff. One of you?
I'm trying to get the post game up right now. What are you asking me for? Leave me alone.
I was delayed there, Drew. Yeah, I agree. There has been kind of it's a little bit of confusion out there, quite frankly, right? Like this was the third place team in the division. They swept the Edmonton Oilers. This isn't like a bad hockey team. I don't think that the Jets are a Stanley Cup contender, but the way they have played in these three games, it looks like a completely different team than the Oilers series. Is your team going to look different when you're missing, you know, your top center and, you know, one of your top four defensemen, probably their second best defenseman after Neil Pionk? Yeah, absolutely. They're going to look different, but you know, you still have to have a plan when you know, and you watched what Montreal did against Toronto. It was the same thing that they did in the last couple of games against the Leafs, right? Like, we know that the Montreal Canadiens, and they've said this, like Dominic Ducharme has said this, you know, Brendan Gallagher has said this, like other players on the Habs, like they know that they can't go run and gun. They don't have, you know, Matthews, Marner. They don't have Scheifele and Connor and Ehlers. They know how they have to win. And it almost looks like even though the Jets are trying to get through, you know, this kind of, you know, aggressive kind of Montreal stifling defense, they're not executing. They're not finding a way to do it. And they've looked frustrated. Like, there were big stretches of that second period where the Jets didn't have a shot on net and it was completely dominated. As, you know, Dave said, shots were 11-3, I believe, right? Or something like that.
Can't happen.
So, yeah, it just can't happen when you're in a must-win situation.
Let me tell you something, boys. I having watched the Colorado-Vegas series, which right now is 2-1 for Colorado in game – sorry, it's 2-1 for Vegas in game 4. Whichever team plays those teams, is likely getting pumped. I mean, that just, it just doesn't seem like it is a, I watched the game two. It was unbelievable. I watched game three. Yeah. That was unbelievable. Even Tampa, Carolina, I was watching that game. That was exciting hockey.
Whole different world.
It's we use this throughout the course of our doing the Saturday show. We talked about, we said, this is the NHL. That's like the KHL. I think we used the wrong, I think we need to reverse that because these North teams don't look like they're in the same class as the teams that are down South right now.
I would agree completely with that. I'll tell you what. Let's go to break. We'll take our only commercial break. When we come back, we should have Jets head coach Paul Maurice have his post-game media availability. Much more to come. While you're here, smash the like button. That's all we ask of you. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Sunday evening, welcome back to the Illegal Curve post-game show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. So nice to see so many of you joining us in the chat. Reminder, we'll do it again tomorrow night, the Illegal Curve post-game show, probably around 9:30, 9:45, give or take a couple minutes. Will it be the last one of the regular season? Pardon me, of the 2021 season? We will find out tomorrow night. If it's not, the Jets will obviously come back for game five here in Winnipeg, but they are certainly behind the eight ball now. Down 3-0 to the Montreal Canadiens after losing tonight by that 5-1 margin. Winnipeg Jets captain Blake Wheeler met with the media a short time ago. Let's hear what he had to say.
You can't reinvent the wheel now. You can't start over and try to do something completely different. I think there's some things in our game that we really like, some things we can clean up certainly, and hopefully we get a bounce to go our way. You know, hopefully one goes off one of their sticks and ricochets in and into the net, and you know, we'll take a lead and see how it looks from there. But you know, outside of that, you can't doubt the process.
Go back to Ken Weeb for a follow-up. Go ahead, Weaver.
Like, you make that hesitation and then rattle the shot off the bar. I mean, just what's going through your mind when you see you beat the goalie but it hits the bar and goes out of play there?
You know, it was pretty strange. I was dead certain that it went in. I thought it hit the back bar or the goalie or the camera in the net. Felt like I scored. You know, it's a 1-1 hockey game and kind of changes the complexions of things. And you know, it's part of being good. Sometimes you got to get lucky too. So he's obviously standing tall in the net right now, and things are going his way.
We'll go next to Paul Friesen from the Winnipeg Sun. Go ahead, Paul.
Blake, I think the question maybe on the lips of every or most Jets fans is what has happened to the team that played Edmonton in the first round? It just looks a lot different.
Yeah, well, it feels a lot different too, Paul, because, you know, we had a lot of things go our way in the first round. And I think we played a team with high expectations and we were able to use the pressure against them. You know, I think we were able to use some of that pressure and kind of just, you know, force it upon them. And from there, you know, like I said, we had some things go our way and we were able to play the series on our terms. And so far this series, you know, we take 10 days off. Game one, we don't like. You know, game two is a little bit better, but still not quite ourselves. And I think we started the game right tonight. And it just, when you play against a team with a goalie the way he's playing, and, it, you know, once they get a lead, it completely changes the way they play the game. You know, it makes it tough, and certainly we're pressing right now too.
Go next to Jeff Hamilton from the Winnipeg Free Press. Go ahead, Jeff.
Thanks, Ray. Hi, Blake. Montreal hasn't trailed in a game for six straight, obviously through the first three here. You mentioned kind of on your terms, how challenging is it to play in games where, not that you're constantly chasing, but you're not getting that early edge?
Yeah, well, I mean, you are chasing the game because you know, now some of the things that we're doing and having success with, you know, we get a little bit too aggressive and it's a 2-on-1 the other way, or, you know, you can control big chunks of the game. Like I think we did in the second period there for a little while. And instead of having it be a tie hockey game or, you know, pulling ahead or what have you, you know, they come down the ice and score a goal. And it's like, I mean, just it's hard to kind of keep building yourself up when, you know, the things you're doing that are giving you success, you're not getting rewarded for. And then, you know, it seems like any little mistakes you're paying for.
We'll go back to Jeff Hamilton for a follow-up. Go ahead, Jeff.
It's been a unique year, Blake, obviously, but it's also been a unique playoffs with these back-to-back games. What do you make of kind of going right back at it less than 24 hours later?
I mean, I think it's great for us right now, to be honest with you. I think having to sit in the hotel room all day tomorrow and stew on that one, you know, I think you'd have a lot of guys burning inside. So it's nice to get right back at it tomorrow, and hopefully we get a good feeling in our room and kind of start to rebuild ourselves. And I mean, we got to win a hockey game, right? No different than it was today. We got to win one game and then see what happens.
Just a couple more for Blake. We'll go next to Carter Brooks from Game On. Go ahead, Carter.
Hi, Blake. You kind of just touched on it with the quick turnaround. But how does the mentality change now that it's a 3-0 series lead from Montreal rather than a 2-1 heading into this important game four?
I don't think it's – I mean, because it hasn't been 2-1 yet. So we never really thought that way. It was 2-0. So I don't think our mentality changes at all from 2-0 to 3-0. Obviously, the – you know, you lose one more game, we all know the consequences of that. But I think the thought process is very much the same. You know, just we got to stay together. I think that's the strength of our team this year. And certainly when, you know, you lose Mark, you know, we got to rely on the depth of our team. That's been the strength of our team all year. Four lines that can be effective and you know, produce and get the job done.
Final question to Scott Billick from the Sun. Go ahead, Scott.
Thanks, Gregor. And hey, Blake. You were on the Bruins team that was up 3-0 and lost that series. What do you remember about, you know, what a win for the other team can do at 3-0 to make it 3-1 and how that momentum can kind of roll into perhaps coming back in this one?
As if my night can't get any worse. Got to bring that one up. No, I mean, these are all learning experiences. Unfortunately, I've had to learn some tough lessons in the playoffs, that being a really tough one to learn. It's no different than what Montreal is doing right now. I mean, they were dead in the water, down 3-1 to Toronto. You know, everyone was packing their bags, getting ready to go to Toronto after game five. And they got one out in overtime and momentum swing. So, you know, that's all it is. It's the playoffs are all momentum, and right now they're an extremely confident team in what they're doing, and they're getting results from that. And, you know, we're on the other side of the pendulum right now where we don't have a ton of confidence, and you know, we're kind of scratching and clawing to find it. So that, you know, game four can flip everything on its head, and you know, then you just build tension, and that's what we got to do. We just got to find a way to try to win a hockey game, and then we can breathe. Excuse me. Then we can breathe a little bit. They can kind of have to think about it for a couple of days, and then it slowly builds. And that's what happens.
Thanks very much, Blake.
There he goes, Winnipeg Jets captain Blake Wheeler addressing the media after tonight's loss by the Jets to the Montreal Canadiens, a 5-1 defeat. The Jets in tough now, down 3-0 to the Montreal Canadiens. And that was really the bulk of the Blake Wheeler of media availability discussion there, sort of talking about, you know, how do they find the hope? How do they inch their way back into the series game after game? And of course he said, you know, it's good that they get to get right back at it tomorrow with the second half of the back-to-back. You know, maybe you get that one game, if you play well in game four, maybe you can plant some seeds of doubt in the heads of the Montreal Canadiens. But from my perspective, given what we've seen so far, it's going to take more than just one win for those seeds of doubt to really you know, formulate, and for those seeds of doubt to flourish, and for those seeds of doubt to blossom into anything other than a Montreal Canadiens series win at this point, gentlemen.
Are we doing gardening here right now, Drew, with all of this like seed talk?
I got a new garden box coming tomorrow. So that's nice. That's an exciting nice development. Yeah.
Keep those rabbits away, right?
Yeah, you got to keep the rabbits away because my wife was not happy. They ate all our hostas the other day, and oh boy, there
we almost hostas had as well. Yeah,
oh, we almost had some rabbit stew as a front, result.
Yeah.
Dave, do you have any hostas? You're on mute, Dave. Dave, you're muted.
you know, when you talk about,
I was gonna say, sadly, I actually do have Hostas, unfortunately. I was gonna make fun of you two losers, and then I realized, oh shoot, I do actually have some Hostas in the air, so I can't actually make fun of this this level of conversation.
It right kind of makes sense because there's a lot of hostility between the three of us, right, Dave?
Yeah, so, exactly.
No, I mean, like, it's gonna obviously take a lot to get, you know, a series win here. Like, you know, Wheeler touched on it, you know, with, you know, starting it with one win. But you're right, Drew. Like, you know, maybe if you know, the Jets win a couple of games, and especially if they're able to kind of figure out this stifling defense. But, you know, he touched on something that to me stands out. And we've watched a lot of hockey over the years, boys. And, you know, this does look like a frustrated group. And I think that frustration did boil over in those three penalties. And, you know, you can say whatever you want, you know, about the way the Jets have played in this series. But, you know, when the Montreal Canadiens took that too many men on the ice penalty, you're thinking, okay, you know, like, this is the Jets' chance here.
Yeah.
This is their chance to come back in this game. And giving up a shorthanded goal when you did that in game one is absolutely killer. It was game one, right? Because Lowry scored the shorthanded goal in game one. Was it game one or two when they gave up? No, but when...
I think as he's frozen, so I'm not sure where he...
I don't think Montreal scored it. Yeah, Montreal. Yeah, exactly. You know, Montreal, I was up early, and I should go to bed right after this post-game show is over. Montreal hasn't scored a shorthanded goal prior tonight, but, you know, that's a killer. And that's going to kill all of your momentum, and then you take the penalties, and it makes it even worse.
Tyler Toffoli scored a shorthanded goal in game two. That was the only goal.
Talking about? I couldn't even see. I blacked out. I couldn't even remember the only goal that was scored goal in game two.
Yeah.
Well,
in our defense,
you guys didn't remember it either.
No. In our defense, your mic froze.
We actually couldn't hear what you were saying. Yeah, it sounded very garbled.
Yeah.
Okay. Regardless, my performance has been pretty weak these last couple minutes, but
kind of looked like Jets tonight, Ezzy.
Well, and again, you know, like we talked about it earlier on in the show, like. It's obvious for me to say, like, you know, Ehlers hasn't scored a goal. Wheeler hasn't scored a goal. You know, Kopp hasn't scored a goal. Dubois hasn't scored a goal in three games. But that is ultimately, you know, what it's going to come down to and why the Jets are down here, because their top players just aren't putting the puck in the net. And yeah, you know, Wheeler could talk all he wants about, you know, he thought that puck went in. It didn't go in. So, I mean, like, you know, it's not luck. I mean, look, if you like analytics, the analytics have not favored the Jets in this series.
Ezzy, are you talking about the advanced analytics?
Well, yeah, exactly.
That's painful. I mean, I watched that. And I'm thinking, I don't understand. Is that really considered? Is that the name of the company? That's got to be the name of the company.
No, it's AWS. That's Amazon Web Services.
Whatever it is, it's embarrassing. I it's so embarrassing. I'm like, this is not advanced analytics. That's, I don't know. Anyways,
it's the story here. You have to score more goals, and they haven't. And yeah, maybe they win game four, but I think it's going to be really tough for them to win four games in a row. The way they've played, especially considering you're going to be without Scheifele for another two games.
How about you win a period? They haven't won a period in this series to speak of. I mean, you know, win a period and then you could talk about winning, you know, then you could talk about winning two periods, and then you can talk about winning three periods, then you can talk about winning a game. I mean, winning four games in a row would be... Look, there's no evidence. There's nothing that's been on display through the first three games of this series that would say anything that this Jets team can do anything other than maybe win a game, maybe two in a row. I mean, there's no evidence at all presented that this team is about to stage an epic comeback. There just isn't. I mean, you know,
tonight would have been the night. Tonight would have been the night to show that you have the requisite cojones to be able to push back against Montreal. And you know, impose your will a little bit. We didn't see it. And like I said, in that second period, you're down 1-0 and you're being outshot 11-3. That to me is the part that's, and sure, Ehlers hits a crossbar, Wheeler hits a crossbar, could have made it a completely different game. But you don't, then it's 2-0, then it's 3-0. Yeah. Even when it's 3-1, you're thinking, okay, can the Jets 3-1 after 40, you're like, okay, this is not insurmountable. But then it becomes 4-1 and you're like, well, that's stick a fork in these guys there because they're done.
Exactly right. I mean, that's just really what it boils down to at that point in time. It's just there's no evidence that this team has got, you know, another level that they can that they have. There's no question they have another level, but there's no evidence that level is such a higher level that they can come back and win four in a row. But let's hear from Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice regarding his thoughts on the team's performance.
Hold on. Got to give Ty a shout out. I'd be happy if they won a pregame skate. It's pretty
good. Huh? You know what? He's not wrong.
It's not that funny, Ty. Ty's not that funny.
as he's getting grumpy, he's been up for since 5:30 in the morning, and now he's getting grumpy. Here's Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice.
Sportsnet. Go ahead.
Paul, what's the message to your group as you face elimination for the first time these playoffs?
That'll be delivered tomorrow, Ken. The idea is the requirement is to win a game for both teams. And they have to close out a series, and we have to extend it. So from the time that buzzer ended the game to the start, we're preparing for that.
We'll go next to Sean Reynolds from Sportsnet. Go ahead, Sean.
Paul, I keep hearing your players say they like parts of their game. I'm wondering, have you seen enough from your team over these three games that there's enough for you to build a confidence in winning off of, or does your team need to raise its game way above where you've been?
I would say both parts, and they're accurate in that there are pieces of our game tonight that were better than the previous two. We're going to have to get to another level on a lot of those stick fights. You know, we're not coming up with the pucks that we need to come with. Up with the times, and that's got to be bigger. We skated better through the neutral zone tonight. We had more zone time than we probably had in terms of puck on our stick. Couple of crossbars, so there's shots that are being taken, that are the right ones to take. And we got to get the inside of the bar, not the out.
I'll go back to Sean Reynolds for a follow-up. Go ahead, Sean.
Paul, I know the game plan for days has been getting people to the front of the net. Now, is what's it going to take to get there?
Well, speed first, in and on it. And at times, you know, it's a challenge for sure, getting net front on that team. They got four pretty powerful men back there that keep that area clear. So we got to get some speed to the net. If we can't do it with size, it's got to be done with quickness.
Go next to Paul Friesen from the Winnipeg Sun. Go ahead, Paul.
Paul, I think a lot of fans are probably wondering what's happened to that team that played Edmonton in the first round. Now, I know there's two teams out there, but what do you say to that?
The 4-0 doesn't tell you the story. That was a tight, tight series. I mean, clearly, you know, overtime games, a 1-0 game, very much like here. We're on the wrong side of it. Now, God, in terms of quality offense, Edmonton generated quite a bit more on us, but in doing so, we were able to generate enough to win those games. They're very, very tight each game. And they've been better, you know, two games in the first period. They were better than we were in the first three. And that's where we got to start tomorrow.
Go next to Murat Atesh from The Athletic. Go ahead, Murat.
Thanks, Gregor. Paul, you talked about getting in the middle of the ice through speed. And it seemed like maybe there's more stretching. I know Blake Wheeler had a good chance off of a stretch early and things like that. Is the angle here to try to give Montreal more looks at their own blue line so you can have that speed?
Sorry, Murat, the last part, is it to try to give? Can you ask me that one again, please?
For sure, pardon me. Is the goal with maybe some of the stretching and with the speaking to speed right now to just give yourself more options at their line?
Yeah, I mean, the stretch is a good idea if you can get it there. And if you can't, then you're hemmed up. Like, you're talking about a team that will sit quite often. I mean, they're aggressive on the forecheck when they have a chance. And if not, they're going to sit in that neutral zone. There's going to be five. So stretching into five is not a good idea. But if we can move with the pocket and then have options beyond the stretch, then, you know, you force them to break up, you know, some of their compactness in the neutral zone.
Go next to Jeff Hamilton from the Winnipeg Free Press. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hey, Paul. Third period has been some of your best periods this playoffs. This past third period seemed like it just, you know, Stastny's stick got up there. I think it looked a bit accidental, but the cross check by Pierre Luc and Copp's kind of retaliation, is that just tempers overboiling? And can that happen at this point in the series?
Yeah. I would think there was a penalty there on Paul Stastny. That was a pretty tough call because they scored and it went from 3-1 to 4-1. The tempers that flare toward the end of a game in a 4-1 game, I think you see that in playoff hockey.
Go back to Jeff Hamilton for a follow-up. Good job.
You won't have to sit with this one for very long. Paul, what's your take on playing in less than 24 hours?
Probably good for the team that I thought I thought Edmonton came out real, real strong in game four and looked real determined. I think that focus that you have when you have no other option but to win, I think at times can be an advantage for you. So I think we'll be good tomorrow.
Go next to Ted Wyman from The Sun. Go ahead, Ted.
Paul, do you sense any frustration with your players because of the tight checking and getting crossbars instead of goals?
Well, that part would be. You know, those guys that hit those crossbars, I mean, they get paid to score goals, and they take a lot of pride in that. So that's frustrating. The tight checking would be playoff hockey. There wouldn't be any more frustration in tonight's game than any of the games against Edmonton. That's the way the game's played.
Next to Sarah Lesky from TSN. Go ahead, Sarah.
Thanks, Paul. Blake mentioned about how this team doesn't have be a ton of confidence right now, obviously struggling scoring as well. What is the first step maybe to getting some of that confidence in game four?
Yeah, get it early. That's the key piece. And when you're having a hard time scoring, you've got to push early as hard as you can, at least to get the good feeling, get the zone time, get pucks to the net, some chances, some looks, and then your confidence will grow from there.
Just a couple more for Coach. We'll go next to Guillaume Lefrancois from La Presse. Go ahead, Guillaume.
Hi, Paul. Adam mentioned, you know, the team having problem with boxing out at times in front of the net. I was wondering if you saw maybe some problems there at times throughout the game.
Yeah, you know what? We both teams have their strengths and they have their weaknesses, and you know, we work hard at that. We got some guys that can do it. We got some young guys back there too that are still learning how to do it.
Final question of Paul Friesen from The Sun. Go ahead, Paul.
Paul, do you have some picking up of spirits to do? The center team is a bit down.
No, you know what? You go into an NHL room after it loses a game, 10 minutes after, there's not going to be a lot of fun in there right now. So we deal with it that way. We don't want to turn the music on and throw a party here. Just lost another hockey game and we got our backs against the wall. But we start working on tomorrow, right after this game. So we do our media and then we start to recover and get better.
Thanks very much, Coach.
There he goes. Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice after addressing the media. The Jets losing tonight, of course, by a 5-1 margin. They trail in the series 3-0. Have to believe there's going to be some lineup changes for tomorrow night. You just can't trot out the same exact roster again like you did for games 2 and 3 for the most part and expect to have different results, at least from my perspective. I'm just not sure that the Jets, you have nothing left to lose. You might as well play every ace that you have in the hole because you're down 3-0. So you throw something different at the wall, see what sticks, and you never know. You got to start by winning one period, start by getting a lead in the series. The Jets have not had a lead in the series. And, everyone remembers how tight the series was against Edmonton, but at least the Jets had some leads at that point, in that series before winning the games in overtime. You need a lead because that just changes the dynamic of what we've seen between the Jets and the Habs. So the Habs get to play their style because the Jets never have a lead.
As the non-ace of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, I guess the aces that you play are, you know, Jansen Harkins, Ville Heinola. You know, Dave mentioned David Gustafson. I just think Dave Minuk, not Dave Gustafson. I think it's just been, you know, such a long time since he's gotten into a game that, yep. I would imagine, you know, Harkins would probably have the edge, and then, you know, Toninato, right? But Heinola's the big one, Drew. So I'd like to see that. I think we all agreed that, you know, tonight's game was the game that you put Heinola in to give you more of a kind of an offensive presence on the back end, more of that puck moving ability, some more of that speed, right? So I agree with you. I would expect, you know, one or two moves. I don't think you're going to see like three moves like the Oilers did. What was that, game 3 or game 4 when they brought in Ennis, Kaiton Haas, forgetting who the other one, Devin Shore was the other guy. So I would expect it to be one or two moves, not maybe three, but you talked about it just there, Drew, like they're going to have to dictate pace. They're going to have to get an early lead. And if they don't get the early lead, they're going to have to tie it up quickly and get that lead. They can't play down, you know, one goal or two goals. It just hasn't worked for them. Montreal just goes back into that kind of defensive shell. You know, we don't want to call it the trap 1-3-1, whatever you want to call it. The Habs are just absolutely owning the Jets right now. In their zone, it's basically like, you know, dump the puck in and we'll get it out quickly. So, you know, the Jets have to have more zone time. They have to dictate pace. They have to come through that neutral zone with speed. The zone exits have to be better. The zone entries have to be better. We'll see what happens. I mean, you know, maybe they make, you know, make this series interesting with a game four win. But based on, you know, the last couple of games and the fact that they're down 3-0, I think it's going to be very difficult for them to win the series or even get it to six games and you know, get Mark Scheifele back into the lineup for them.
All right, getting it to six games would be an accomplishment based on how the first three games of the series went. I mean, it starts tomorrow, Dave Minuk, so they do get that opportunity to jump right at it, and either it'll be game five back here in Winnipeg on Wednesday night, or you know, we can all tomorrow night will be the final post game show of the year. One or the other, nothing in between for the Winnipeg Jets. It's on them to dig deep and find that other level that they haven't yet found so far this series, and that's really, I think, what's troubling for everybody so much, is that it just seems like there's no urgency to their game, and you thought that urgency would be there tonight, but it wasn't, and now you're down 3-0 to a very good, very, very stingy Montreal Canadiens team.
Never before, I don't think, has a first goal been so important in a game for the Winnipeg Jets than tomorrow night. I really do think that is going to really either make them, put them at a little bit at ease, because this team just doesn't have, they just don't have it right now, and I think if they can get that goal, that'll give them a little confidence to kind of play their game and not to, as his point, allow Montreal to go into the prevent defense and shut things down. Because that's what Montreal, you know, we talked about it the other day when Toffoli scored the shorthanded goal. It looked like they played 38 minutes of shutdown preserve that one goal lead, which they were able to do, of course, and win the game. But as I termed it, it was probably one of the most boring playoff hockey games I've ever watched in my entire life. And then, of course, I had to, like, it's amazing to have gone from that experience to the third period of Vegas and Colorado and had the complete opposite experience. And it was like, strap that to your veins if you want to live for, you know, on the fast lane, because that hockey was incredible to watch. So we'll see if the Jets can do it. Positive note for folks, since everybody seems to be negative, you know, there's a lot of negativity, obviously, with the Jets losing. On a positive note, Jets 2020 first rounder Cole Perfetti and Team Canada won in Latvia today. Today they were able to defeat Finland and win in overtime. You know, Cole Perfetti didn't play a lot, but it was such a good experience for him to have played World Juniors and take silver with Team Canada, play an unbelievable season in his first year pro with the Manitoba Moose, and then to end it with the World Championships, playing with, you know, professionals in the NHL and getting that sort of experience. So really good for the Jets to set 2020 first rounder when the OHL season didn't even happen this year. What an opportunity for him to have gained all of that experience and end it, bookend it, you know, but with a silver and a gold, and especially to end with gold and with Team Canada, pretty remarkable experience for him. So that's probably the one positive for Jets fans, if they're looking for something, is that Cole Perfetti has really, as Craig Eisinger told me, I want to say maybe 2 weeks ago when I spoke to him about, on our Moose wrap up, he said, what a acceleration for this young man this year has been for him. And this can only increase that. So that's probably the one positive. I'll end the show on some positivity.
There you go. Dave Minuk always looking for the bright side of things. And Cole Perfetti, certainly the bright side for his performance this year in Team Canada, winning gold when it really looked for a while there like they weren't even going to qualify for the playoff round at the World Hockey Championships. That's it for us with the Illegal Curve post-game show. If you want more post-game talk, Kenny and Rennie have started. We'll be back tomorrow night right around 9:30, 9:45, somewhere around that. We'll either be talking about a potential Game 5 on Wednesday, or we'll be talking about the end of the Winnipeg Jets season. Nothing in between. Want to say a big thank you and a big shout-out to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Boston Pizza, and our friends at Seagram's. Support these fine businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey, and they make this show possible. On your way out, if you haven't already done so, be sure to smash the like button. That's what we want from you. Leave your comments. Let us know what you like. Let us know what you dislike. Unless it's about me, I don't want to hear that because I'm very, very, my ego is very, very fragile. For Dave Minuk,
but you're double vaxxed though, fully vaxxed.
I am fully vaxxed, so that's a good attaboy, thing to. I can hang my hat on that. So that is a good feeling as well, Ezzy. You're right about that. For Dave Minuk in the top right corner, for Ezra Ginsberg in the bottom of the screen, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for watching the Illegal Curve post-game show. We'll see you again tomorrow night. And until then, we wish you good night and good luck.